branding, experience, conversation, promotion, powerful marketing, empowering small business to change their status quo. It's the internet show all about small business marketing. Jay Arrett hosts the brightest minds in marketing. Power to the small business.
Hola, señores y señoras, y bienvenidos a Power to the Small Business. A little Spanish lingo for you there. In English, and in Spanish, I guess, my name is Jay Arrett. Although you know how in high school Spanish class you have to take a Spanish name, mine was Diego. In any event, the rest of the show will be broadcast in English. Just a quick note, my company website is themarketingspot.com, and all the show notes for this episode of Power to the Small Business can be found on the podcast website, which is powertothesmallbusiness.com. And if you're a Facebooker, please check out my Facebook page at facebook.com/themarketingspot. This is a special episode of Power to the Small Business. It's my essential small business reading list. Took me a couple of months to pull this one off, and I wanted to get the actual authors of the books on my reading list together on one powerful episode. So just a warning, this one will run a little bit longer than most episodes, but not by that much. Now, before I bring on the authors, here is my essential reading list. There are lots of great books that will help you be a better marketer, but this is my essential list, the ones that I feel are required for you to understand the foundations of marketing, and I have organized them by what I call the four essential spots of small business marketing: branding, experience, conversation, and promotion. I will link to every single book on Amazon in the show notes. So here's the list. Under branding, I recommend two essential books: Positioning by Jack Trout and Al Ries, and Microbranding by T. Scott Grost. Jack Trout and Scott Grost will be on the show to discuss their books. Under experience, I recommend three books: The Experience Economy by Joe Pine and Jim Gilmore, Managing the Customer Experience by Sean Smith and Joe Wheeler, and What's the Secret by John DeJulius. None of these authors will be on the show because I have interviewed them all in previous podcast episodes, and I will link to those episodes in the show notes. On to the conversation spot, where I recommend two essential books: Creating Customer Evangelists by Jackie Huba and Ben McConnell, and Groundswell by Charlene Lee and Josh Burnoff. Jackie Huba and Charlene Lee will be on to discuss their books. And finally, under promotion, I recommend two essential books: Advertising Secrets of the Written Word by Joe Sugarman, and Ogilvy on Advertising by David Ogilvy. I did snag Joe Sugarman to talk about his book, but it was a little difficult to get a hold of David Ogilvy because he passed away in 1999. However, it's such an essential book that I did want to discuss it, so I recruited marketer Brad Shore onto the show because it is one of his favorites, and he wrote a great review about it on Amazon. So there's the lineup. Let's get started. And if you're wondering where we're going to start, it's with the granddaddy book, Positioning: The Battle for Your Mind. Published in 1981, it's a classic, and in my opinion, it changed the way we think about marketing. Co-author Jack Trout joins us to discuss positioning. And with us now is Jack Trout, author of so many marketing books over the years that have shaped the way marketers do business and the way we think. And Jack, hey, welcome. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Jay.
Positioning: The Battle for Your Mind, written, I guess, in 1981. What caused you to write Positioning? Why The Battle for Your Mind?
Well, we began to realize as the world was starting to get competitive, and that was way back in the 70s and then 80s, beginning of the 80s, is that essentially you win or lose in the mind of your prospects. In other words, it was moving into a game of perceptions. How do I perceive you versus your competition, which, of course, was growing? And that was really, it was the first book that really dealt with introduced psychology and marketing and crossed the two of them and essentially introduced the mind as the key battleground. And it was driven by competition.
Do you think marketing has got it. Do you think, for example, all the big advertising agencies that create so much of the advertising that's pervasive, do you think they get it?
No, not enough. You, after all these years, it's amazing. If you look at advertising and you just look at the commercials, you know, there's not much in differentiation out there. There's not much, why buy this one instead of that one? It's gotten into emotion, humor, cuteness. It's a tragedy, and we have researched shows that a lot of categories are getting commoditized more and more. So your answer to your question is no, they're not really doing what they should be doing.
And in a commodity category, positioning is all the more important then.
It's critical, because if you don't do that, now it's all about price. You know, take your pick. You either establish a point of difference, which is really what positioning is, how you differentiate yourself in the mind of your prospect. So you just have to, so it's either do that or come up with a pretty good price.
Well, you've had nearly 30 years to reflect on positioning. You've written a lot of other books. If there was something else you could add to the book Positioning, is there anything you would add to it?
I think conceptually, and I've done this, but not maybe with enough emphasis over the years, is that the key is to have top management involved with these things. You've got to have, this is not about letting marketing guys do it. It really is strategy, and if you don't have the top people making these decisions, you got problems.
Someone once told me a true entrepreneur has the heart of a marketer.
Absolutely. I'm looking at Steve Jobs, the best in the business. I mean, you think about it. He is really a marketing guy, CEO, and look at the job he's done.
Let's get to your new book, Repositioning, now, because it just came out, in the last 6-8 months here. Tell us about Repositioning and how it's related to positioning.
Well, it closes the loop. You know, Repositioning was mentioned in the original book in one chapter. It was called Repositioning the Competition. But as the world has changed in the last 30 years, much more competition, much more change driven by technology, and now the financial crisis, the three C's. And what I've discovered is that repositioning, which is really the definition, is how do you adjust perceptions in the mind? In other words, positioning established perceptions, repositioning adjusting perceptions because of the changing climate. So this really deals with what I would call the twin of positioning, repositioning. And it's a very useful tool in today's really quite a bit changed world.
Kind of like bookend books for your marketing library then.
Exactly right. It's read the first one, that gives you the foundation, and then read the second, which brings it up to date. It's sort of same body of work, only now addressing the problems that we face in today's world.
Last question here, Jack, because positioning, it's used in marketing, but not as much as the word branding has become so common in the marketing vernacular. What is positioning as related to branding? Are they the same thing, or are they different?
Same thing. In other words, a brand is essentially is how do you position your brand? It's really the key to the whole thing. In other words, to me, a brand is still the name. That's really what it really is. And how you differentiate that brand in the mind, how you lay out the benefits of that brand in the mind, that's where positioning comes in. So in essence, they're attached.
Jack, we appreciate you joining us. If people want to find more of your stuff on the web, where would you send them?
TroutEndPartners.com.
Okay, we'll post that link in the show notes. Jack, we appreciate you sharing your thoughts about positioning, the battle for your mind.
Okay, thank you, Jay.
Book number 2 on the essential reading list for small business is probably the simplest, most easily understandable book on small business branding I've ever read. Written by a fellow Texan, let's talk with T. Scott Gross about micro-branding. And with us on the line is Scott Gross. He is the author of one of the books on our essential reading list called Micro-Branding. Hey, Scott, appreciate your time on being on the big show.
My pleasure.
Micro-branding, you published this book in 2001. I probably read it in, I'm guessing, 2002, and really did a lot for the way I think about going about the whole branding process. Tell me what you think are the biggest takeaways from micro-branding.
Well, I think it's the realization that you've got more than one brand, number one, and number two, that everything you do contributes to the brand. And probably number three is what the heck is a brand? Most people get that all screwed up.
What's your definition of a brand, or how do you describe a brand?
This is simple. It's an expectation, period. A brand is an expectation. And if you make it any more complicated than that, you're missing the picture. That means when somebody says my name to you, you have certain expectations. That's a brand.
Tell me what you think entrepreneurs would get out of microbranding if they read this book.
Well, if they just paid attention to the last 30 seconds, that's probably what they get. That's to be my guess. No, there's a lot in the book, but actually, if I were going to read one T. Scott Gross book, I would read Positively Outrageous Service, the second edition, because, you know, it's kind of funny when you write a book. It's sort of like flushing. You think you've said everything there is to say, and then you publish the darn thing, and then you realize, well, hey, I could have said that more effectively. I could have been clearer about it. And your understanding changes a little bit. And so I would read Positively Outrageous Service because, well, first of all, we come to the realization that service is the expression of your brand. That's how you express your brand. It's not on a logo or on a graphic control sheet. It's in customer service. So there's a chapter on microbranding that is really powerful inside Positively Outrageous Service. Because it's all the thoughts that I had after the book went to press, and I said, oh, yeah, I should have said that.
As you're talking, I'm going to reach up on my bookshelf here and pull out Positively Outrageous Service, because I have read that book, too. It says, How to Delight and Astound Your Customers and Win Them for Life. So tell me how branding leads to service. Make the connection for us.
Well, first, let me talk about micro-branding.
Okay.
The definition of a micro-brand is a little brand that sits on top of a big brand and is often the more powerful of the two. I'll give you an example, and I think it was one of my favorite eye-opening moments was I saw an interview for the first manager of Home Depot in San Antonio. It was with the first store manager of Home Depot in San Antonio. And the interviewer said, what's it like to work for a big brand like Home Depot? And the general manager was being a little bit smart, and he said, Home who? And she said, Home Depot, the big orange sign. And he said, oh, that Home Depot, that's their sign. This is my store, and it's mine to make into a fabulous success or a miserable disappointment. He understood that his personal brand was bigger than a Home Depot brand. And that really got my attention. And so what we have in branding, and this is where it ties directly to customer service, the least trained and least invested are doing the heavy lifting of building your brand. And they do it every time they contact a customer. They are shaping the expectation that is your brand.
Yeah, your employees are your frontline brand representatives, but companies often put more effort into building the big brand, the big picture of it, and then throw their employees out there to represent the brand.
Oh, and the stupidest thing, there's a race for the stupidest thing I've ever heard, but one of them has to be the fact that you get marketing departments make promises and then drive people against a promise that can't be kept. Marketing and training ought to be inextricably linked together. There should never be a marketing program that doesn't first visit the training department and say, hey, can we keep this promise?
Well, I've seen some videos of you speaking, very entertaining keynote speaker. We're talking with Scott Gross. He's the author of Microbranding and Positively Outrageous Service. Scott, we want to learn more. Where can we find you on the web?
Well, this is really going to kill you. It's a tough one. tscottgross.com. T as in, well, my wife says taken. tscottgross, G-R-O-S-S.com. I'm real easy to find.
And a fellow Texan now residing in, where are you now?
Beautiful downtown Kerrville, Texas, where I'm putting these ideas to work. I'm a third-term city council member, and we are putting the ideas of customer service and measuring customer service to work.
And Kerrville is a beautiful city. Been there. So, Scott, appreciate your time today.
My pleasure.
That takes us through the branding spot. For the experience spot, the three books I recommend are The Experience Economy, Managing the Customer Experience, and What's the Secret? I've had authors from all three books on the show before, and I will link to each episode in the show notes at powertothesmallbusiness.com. So that means, onto the conversation spot of marketing, my first essential read is Creating Customer Evangelists: How Loyal Customers Become a Volunteer Sales Force by Jackie Huba and Ben McConnell. This book profoundly affected the way I think about stimulating word of mouth. It's heavy with practical examples and practical advice. Joining us to discuss is co-author Jackie Huba. And now we're talking to Jackie Huba. She is co-author of Citizen Marketers and Creating Customer Evangelists, as well as the Church of the Customer blog. And she's principal of Ant's Eye View out of Austin, Texas. Hey, Jackie, appreciate your time.
Hey, thanks so much for including us in your list.
You bet. Creating Customer Evangelists is on the essential reading list for small businesses. And I did so because you don't directly say word of mouth in the title, but this is about creating that word of mouth through creating customer evangelists. Can you describe what's your definition of a customer evangelist?
Yeah, a customer evangelist is someone who doesn't just give a referral or spread word of mouth. They're literally someone who loves the company, loves you, loves your products and services so much that they are compelled to go out and recruit new customers for you. So we really see evangelism as a little bit of a more passionate salesperson who just works as a volunteer on your behalf.
The book is called Creating Customer Evangelists, so that implies that you have some sort of control over it. How much control does a business have over these evangelists or creating them?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, at the end of the day, to get great word of mouth or even have evangelists, I mean, you really actually have to start with a great product or a great service, and that's absolutely under your control. So are you providing a remarkable service that someone would want to talk about? Or are you just sort of average and run-of-the-mill? And there's really then nothing to talk about. There's no reason for people to make a referral. So I think at the very start, before you even think about, you know, should I be using some crazy, you know, word-of-mouth marketing techniques or something, you really have to think about your core business and your core service. Is it worth evangelizing about?
The thing that I really like most about your book, Jackie, is that it's not just a book on theory. I mean, you have some great case studies, but you apply them to what I consider to be like a word-of-mouth playbook. How did you and Ben arrive at the six tenets of creating customer evangelists?
Yeah, we really looked at a lot of different businesses, from small businesses to large businesses, and tried to look at what they have in common. And we actually came up with these six tenets of creating customer evangelists. And, you know, not every business does every one of them to the nth degree, but they're really six philosophies, we almost feel like, in terms of creating evangelists. Everything from being a feedback machine and gathering feedback so that you know what people are saying about you, to creating community among your customers. It's a great way to get people talking, is bring customers together and let them meet each other. So these tenets are really high-level concepts that you can grasp and apply, but the way you do it could be different from business to business.
Now, you and Ben wrote this book, 2003 is when it was published. So 7 years later, how much do you think the landscape has changed as far as creating evangelism and word of mouth?
We did update it, actually, in 2007. So it's new and improved since 2007 when it came out in paperback. You know, I think that what has really changed in the last, 7 years has really been the emergence of online and social media, which is basically, you know, given us all these word-of-mouth jet stream tools like Twitter and Facebook. But so now it's really easy for instead of things that used to happen offline, you know, a neighbor making a referral about a small business, now that happens online all over the web, and it becomes a global thing. It's not just a local thing anymore.
Well, even since you updated the book in 2007, still a lot has changed. If you could add a chapter to the book now, what would you add to Creating Customer Evangelists?
The only thing I would probably add, again, the philosophies are the same, and no matter what the tools are that pop up, new social media tools, the six tenets are the same. I think what we could probably add is some new case studies, where we see lots of small businesses, you know, leveraging this new online word-of-mouth jet stream and doing it really, really well. And I think it's really important for small businesses to figure out how to leverage these social networks. And at the same time, don't forget about offline, because holding in-person events, is a great way to bring customers together and get more word of mouth. So don't forget about offline.
I think your book is a durable book, that it can last for years. Why do you think it's durable? Give me why you think it might be such a durable book.
Yeah, I think actually I was alluding to this, that these tenants that we looked at among these businesses who have great evangelists, these are sort of evergreen type concepts. You know, one of the harder ones to think about is tenant six, which is create a cause. And it's really, you know, why should people believe in your business? That's one that's I think is a bigger concept, a higher idea, and that doesn't matter what new tools pop up. That's something that all businesses might think about, and that's how they can actually attract those customers who love what they do, who've changed their life, and then they want to tell someone about it.
That's Jackie Huba, co-author of the book Creating Customer Evangelists. Jackie, we appreciate your addition to the Essential Small Business Marketing Reading List.
Thanks so much, Jay.
We can't ignore social media in modern day marketing, but most books on social media, in my opinion, well, they're pretty fluffy, light on practicality, although they give a lot of advice. But I think they're temporary books mostly because social media changes so quickly. But there is one that I think is durable and will help you understand social media marketing, Groundswell. So let's talk with co-author Charlene Lee. And with me now is Charlene Lee. She's co-author of the book Groundswell, Winning in a World Transformed by Social Technologies. She's also author of the new book Open Leadership and co-founder of the Altimeter Group, and she joins us from San Mateo, California. Charlene, welcome to the big show.
Thank you for having me.
We appreciate you being here, and as you know, Groundswell is on my essential reading list for small business marketers, and the book was written 2 years ago. And gosh, a lot of things can change quickly in social media. Since 2008, like Facebook had, I think, 90 million users back in 2008, which we thought was a lot. And now it's like 500 million. I think someday it's going to surpass the population of the planet. But what are the big changes in social media, do you think, since you wrote Groundswell?
Well, I think the biggest one is that we actually now have a culture of sharing, which is something I describe in the book Open Leadership. In that before it was just a technology, but now it created a way for us to make sharing really easy, and it's one of the things that makes us so human. And so what these social technologies are actually doing is allowing us to connect in new ways that we never could before, and it's just grown and grown and grown to the point where our sense of what we share and what we feel comfortable sharing and what we expect people to share has really changed over the past 2 years.
So you think social media has had a big hand in that then?
Absolutely, because before, if you wanted to share, it was cut and paste an email into cut and paste a URL into an email and send it to maybe 4 or 5 people. Now you would think twice about sharing that same link to however many people are following you, or even to the public on Twitter or on a blog.
Well, 2 years later, if you could add anything to the book that maybe you had to leave out, or since then something else has happened, what would you add to the book now?
Well, Twitter was just on the horizon when we finished the book at the end of 2007. And so we got lucky and we were able to include it in the book. I would definitely talk more about that. I would have talked more about Facebook. Again, Facebook was still just beginning to be in there. We included it. But it was not even close to being the force of nature that it is today.
How durable do you think the book Groundswell is?
Well, it's already 2 years out. And we designed it to be a book that would have some legs because it's not a technology book. It's a book about how you can accomplish goals by changing the relationships you have with people through these social technologies.
You know what I like about the book, Charlene, and there are lots of things to like about it, but you don't just explain social media. You also kind of give this this framework for helping you decide what social media tool to choose, because a lot of people, they just look at, oh, there's a bunch of social media out there. But Groundswell, you say, if you have this challenge, use this tool.
And in particular, I think that the biggest issue was having a plan, having a strategy, instead of thinking about these things as individual technologies. Because you can't really have a Facebook strategy. It just doesn't make sense. But you can have a strategy that says, I want to have a dialogue, and I want to talk with my customers, and I can use Facebook to do that.
Now, how durable do you think social media is?
I think it's here to stay. We don't see very many seismic shifts that are caused by technology in our lifetimes, and we've just gone through a whole bunch of them. client server, the internet, mobility. And I think social is one of those things that has changed fundamentally our relationships with people. So I think it's definitely here. I can't say that Facebook is necessarily going to be here forever. It certainly looks like it. but I think the sites will come and go, but the fact that we are social with each other, that we share with each other is here to stay.
Yeah, we all remember how integral AOL used to be in part of our life.
Right.
Okay. Well, tell me about your new book, Open Leadership. What's that about?
Well, it's about a new way of thinking about leadership, in that there's a requirement now because of all the sharing that it needs to be more open. And I saw this when I was going around and talking to people about Groundswell for the past 2 years. People were saying, great, I can understand how to use these social technologies. Thanks for laying out those frameworks that you talked about. But I don't like this feeling of being out of control. How open do I need to be in order to be successful? Mm. And that's a really darn good question.
Yeah.
Because if you don't know how open you are, how can you understand how open you need to be? And frankly, it needs to be tied back to those business goals you are trying to achieve. So the book has audits about that you can assess how open you are in information sharing and decision-making. And it's not about being completely open, but appropriately open for you to accomplish your business goals.
Sounds interesting. We'll look for the new book, Open Leadership. Charlene, thank you for joining us on Power to the Small Business.
Thank you.
That's Charlene Lee, co-author of the book Groundswell and author of the book Open Leadership. That takes us to the stepchild of modern day marketing, the promotion spot, advertising and promoting your business. The first essential read is Advertising Secrets of the Written Word, because I think more important than where you advertise is what you advertise. And this book is all about crafting your message. So let's get the lowdown with author and advertising icon, Joe Sugarman. And we go to the Skype line now, where I am excited to be joined by Joe Sugarman. He was once called the mail order maverick by the New York Times. He's probably most famously known as the founder of the Blue Blocker sunglasses, and he's the author of the book on our essential reading list, Advertising Secrets of the Written Word. And Joe, hey, welcome to the big show.
Well, thank you for having me, Jay.
Advertising Secrets of the Written Word, it's on my essential reading list. How do you think this book will help people do better advertising?
Well, I think the knowledge of the knowledge of copywriting is extremely valuable. You have within your grasp a very powerful tool, and if you could communicate yourself, and if you could use the psychology of selling, then you're going to be way ahead of the game. I've had a lot of people contact me and just tell me that their life changed because they spent time learning how to be a copywriter, and it isn't that difficult. And as a consequence, they were able to build very big businesses. I've built several businesses just through the power of my pen.
You know, Joe, right now advertising kind of gets a bad rap with all the online media, the social media craze right now. What do you think is the status of advertising?
Well, I think we're undergoing an amazing radical change. First of all the principles apply. In other words, all these principles that have been in existence for years, ever since I've been in direct marketing and in copywriting, they still are very valid. There's no change there. But now the delivery methods are so different and so intertwined and so and they're growing so quickly that it's just mind-boggling. I can hardly keep up. But again, the principles are the same. So if you learn how to use some of these vehicles and you know how to communicate on them, as you are, then you will have a very powerful tool going forward.
Because you still basically have to sell your product. You still have to explain it. I mean, copy's involved in some way, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, you talk about how you've used it on your blog, how you've used it to communicate, for example, some of your interviews. And, the principles are pretty much the same. Again, what's different and what's rapidly changing is the delivery.
Well, you published the book, Advertising Secrets of the Written Word. It was published in 98. What do you think is still the same? What's changed since you've written it?
I've been asked that a lot, and really the only thing that has been changed is that before, magazines and newspapers were your only source of distribution, or at least your only source of spreading the word. but now you have other media. And so the thing that has basically changed is, again, the delivery system. And then, you know, I had in my Advertising Secrets of the Written Word, I had 30 psychological triggers that you could use to sell. And the only difference between back then and 98 and today is I realized one other trigger that I didn't have in that book.
So there's really 31 psychological
triggers. That's right.
Joe, can you give us the missing trigger right
Absolutely.
Now? We'll give you a chance to amend the book right now. What's the 31st trigger?
31st trigger is fear.
Fear.
Fear. If somebody, if you explain something to somebody and create a little bit of fear, that will cause that person to take a certain action. Missed that one, but I've got 30
okay.
others too.
Well, now we've got it. We've corrected it right now, and we'll wait, though, for the new edition. Are you going to write a new edition of the book? Yeah, any plans on that?
Yes, I am planning to revise that, actually.
I think one of the tests of a good book is its durability. It's not just, you know, good for a year or two. How durable do you think this one will be?
Well, first of all, it's very easy to read. I mean, you've read it.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, it takes you in a step-by-step sort of way so that when you finish the book, you will say to yourself, and I get this a lot, you'll say to yourself, hey, I could be a great copywriter. You will be so anxious to sit down and write copy because, you know, the book also inspires you.
I'll agree with you, Joe, and I read this book. I read this book about 4 years ago now, but I remember as going through it, you finished one chapter, and the way you write copy, it just makes you naturally want to go ahead and right now read the next chapter and keep on going. So it's a very easy read, like you said, but also very powerful. I appreciate you joining us today and sharing some insights behind the book, Advertising Secrets of the Written Word. If we want to learn more or see what Joe Sugarman's up to, where can we find you on the web?
Believe it or not, I have just started a blog, joesugarman.com. And I'll be there. And if you are interested, well, you can write joesugarman@aol.com.
Well, Joe, I appreciate you sharing the insights behind the book, and thank you for joining us on Power to the Small Business.
Well, thank you, Jay.
And that brings us to the final book of our Small Business Marketing Essential Reading List, Ogilvy on Advertising. It's considered a classic, and David Ogilvy is considered one of the all-time brightest minds in advertising. But as I mentioned, David Ogilvy is no longer with us. I happened, however, to see Brad Shore's review of the book on Amazon. Brad's a copywriter and a content strategist in the Chicago area, and I know Brad through Twitter and LinkedIn. So I called Brad, asked him to stand in for Ogilvy, and Brad said he would not do the English accent, but he would be happy to discuss a book. Now, I have to tell you that what you are about to hear is a highly edited version of mine and Brad's conversation. We got into an advertising / social media / push versus pull / interruption discussion that ran an extra 10 minutes, but I edited it down to just the conversation about the book. I may release mine and Brad's conversation as a podcast extra, so don't be surprised if that shows up in your iTunes feed one day. But here is Brad Shore discussing Ogilvy on Advertising. And now joining us to talk about the classic book Ogilvy on Advertising is Brad Shore. He is Director of Content Marketing for Straight North, just on the outskirts of Chicago. Hey, Brad, appreciate you joining us on the big show to talk about Ogilvy on Advertising.
Thank you, Jay. It's one of my favorite books.
And that's why we have you on. Obviously, it's a little tough for us to get a hold of David Ogilvy for this series on the Essential Reading List. I guess the first thing I just want to ask about Ogilvy on Advertising, it's more than 25 years old now. Is it still applicable? Is it still a book that entrepreneurs can read and get stuff out of?
Oh, I definitely think so. I read it for the first time about 4 or 5 years ago when I first started blogging. And many of the things that I read in this book helped me with learning how to blog. So, you know, I think David Ogilvy was a guy who was way ahead of his time. And I mean, I was kind of flipping through the book last night preparing for this, and there's just so much in here that I think is still of value to any business, for writing, for marketing, for advertising. And it's very easy to read, too.
Marketing guys and entrepreneurs, we like to read the new stuff and keep abreast of current trends. So Ogilvy on Advertising, 25 years old. Do the ads, do they seem worn out, or can you look back at some of those ads that he gives as examples and say, you know what, I could refresh that and use that now?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, David Ogilvy is a fantastic writer. So looking at the ads and reading the copy, I think is excellent training and education for anybody who's going to write any type of marketing material. Some of the graphic images themselves are a little outdated, but where he positions them, the size of the ads, how they relate to the content that's written, I think is still very applicable.
Maybe you could just sum it up. What makes this book, Ogilvy on Advertising, so good? What are the big takeaways from the book?
Well, I think, first of all, his perspective. David Ogilvy was a creative genius, but he was also very tuned into analytics, and he had very good business sense. One of my favorite quotes, I'm not sure if it's from this book or somewhere else, but Ogilvy said, if it doesn't sell, it isn't creative. And I always come back to that, because when you're getting involved in any kind of marketing or advertising activity, sometimes there's a tendency to get carried away or not focus as much as you need to on the business aspect of what you're doing. And I think, for me anyway, that was a lesson that I learned real well from reading this book.
Why do you think entrepreneurs should read this book?
I think it'll help them to understand, first of all, the context of advertising and marketing in their business, what it's supposed to do, how you evaluate whether your marketing and advertising are successful or not. And I think it is just chock full of really good practical tips for the fundamental blocking and tackling aspects of creating and deploying ads and marketing programs.
And you know, Brad, here we are. We're two marketing guys. We're heavily involved in social media and online. And here's a book about advertising. We're discussing this book on advertising right now. Do you think advertising now gets a bad rap compared to all the social media tools, and so people might be less likely to pick up a book like this?
Well, they might be, but I think whether their interest is in advertising or marketing, a lot of the principles are still the same. I can give you an example. One of the things that I learned about blogging from David Ogilvy was where to position images in a blog post. He believed, and if you look at his ad layouts, they're almost always like this, he always believed in putting the image at the top, above the headline. And this was something I hadn't given any thought to at all, but he backs it up with test results, because he measured everything and reached the conclusion that when you put an image above a headline, people are more inclined to read the headline by a very large percentage. So I picked up on that, and you know, for the last 4 or 5 years, I'll position the images on my blog post at the top, or sometimes in the at the right upper corner, and it does have an impact on how many people read it. So there's an advertising principle that I think is very pertinent to social media.
Is there anything you think that's missing from this book? What would you add to this book 25 years later?
I think maybe if Ogilvy were around today, it would be really interesting to read what he thought about social media engagement. You know, a lot of what he talks about is based on, you know, more of the push model of marketing, because that was the way it worked when he wrote this book, I think 1985. But now, you know, we're in an environment where customers and prospects are talking to us, and we have to listen. And I think that is something that, even though it's written about extensively today, would have been interesting to get his take on all of that. How do you listen? How do you respond? How do you generate conversations that lead to business opportunities?
Okay, Brad, I appreciate you sharing your thoughts on Ogilvy on Advertising.
Thank you very much for having me, Jay.
There you have it, the Small Business Marketing Essential Reading List. I'm sure you have suggestions about books you think should be on the list, and quite frankly, I don't want to hear it. Okay, I'm joking. Of course I want to know about your essential books. I read all the time. You can post those suggested reads as comments on the show notes, which can be found at powertothesmallbusiness.com. I'll have links to every single book with a disclaimer that some of those links may be affiliate links. So check them out. Buy one if you wish. Add a comment if you want. And while you're there, make sure you subscribe to the feed of Power to the Small Business on the site, or subscribe in iTunes, the free and easy way to listen to podcasts. That's it for episode number 60, the Essential Small Business Marketing Reading List. My name is Jay Arrett of The Marketing Spot. Thanks for listening to the internet show that's all about small business marketing. Power to the small business.
You've been listening to Power to the Small Business with Jay Arrett, the internet show exclusively about small business marketing. Please see the complete show notes at themarketingspotblog.com. You can also listen to the show online and subscribe in iTunes at powertothesmallbusiness.com. Never miss an episode of the internet show all about small business marketing. Power to the small business.
Special thanks to Mary Lynn Foster of the Big Success Podcast for creating the opening and closing voiceovers of Power to the Small Business. You can find Mary Lynn at the Big Success Show, BIGGSuccess.com.